Up only.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0, Arlington Limited. Liftoff, we have a liftoff.
Up only.
Hello and welcome to Up Only TV. I'm Ledger. Shortly, you will see Kobe and our special guest, Charlie Lee. It's a great day to talk about Litecoin and whatever else we got with Charlie. Before we get to it, I want to tell you about our partner. You know who it is. It's Blockfolio. And I got to call out my buddy Chunk because he was like, what? I didn't know Blockfolio had trading. And I was like, dude, you watch our show. So if you're not paying attention, remember, you can trade with zero fees on Blockfolio directly from one asset to the other. It's a mobile-first experience. It's a fantastic experience. We're really happy to be partners with them and thankful to Blockfolio for sponsoring Up Only and everything that we have going on the show. And of course, you have all the same features that you've always had with Blockfolio, which is excellent portfolio tracking, so you can keep track of your gains as they come along. Thank you so much, Blockfolio. Go to uponly.tv/Blockfolio. Make a trade today. Kobe, hello.
Hi, mate. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing, Charlie?
Doing well.
When I joined the call, I thought that was your actual background, and I've only just noticed it's a green screen. I was going to be like, bro, that's... I need to talk about this on the stream, dude, but I've now noticed...
That's
now
a spoiler. He told me he was actually sitting on the... Is this the Millennium Falcon? I'm an idiot with these kind of things.
It's the Star Destroyer. But yeah, I am actually here. I'm in space. Heading to the moon.
Heading to the moon.
My day's pretty weird because I had a family funeral yesterday and then I had like a 7-hour drive and then I got home and I just went to sleep and I slept for 16 hours. So I woke up about an hour ago at 5 p.m. and had a shower and then just sat down to talk to you. So that's been my whole day. Like, slept, woke up, had a shower. Hi. That's it.
Well, if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, Kobe, Litecoin is in new price exploration or about to be there. Charlie, how do you feel about that? It's been a journey.
It has. It feels good. I mean, yesterday we actually hit 360 or went above 360, which I consider like the all-time high from 2017. But it's been higher on other exchanges, but 360 was my target. So...
And we're above that now. How long ago was it? I guess it was like 4 years, like 3.5 years ago now.
Since the last
That was a relatively long downwards period. And for people that like don't know so much about Litecoin and Litecoin development and your involvement, can you give us like a brief history going, is it like 10 years, 11 years?
It's forever.
Including, like, what is your involvement today and, like, how does Litecoin development happen these days?
Yeah, it's almost 10 years. This year is Litecoin's 10-year anniversary. I created Litecoin in October of 2011. October 2011. And let's see, the history. Well, I mean, it's been up and down, up and down. Recently, I've been focused on Litecoin Foundation, which I'm the managing director of. And just focus on Litecoin, the development of Litecoin and marketing and everything related to Litecoin.
What does the foundation do?
We raise money. So unlike a lot of the other altcoins, Litecoin didn't have a pre-mine. So there's no just coins that we pre-mine and use it for development. So we raise money from donations, from merchandise sales, partnerships. And then we use that money to spend on hiring developers, to marketing the coin, and just anything that that helps the coin and the ecosystem.
And you're now sort of, in a way, responsible for the security of the Dogecoin network. How has that changed how people feel about Litecoin? Or do you think people just don't know?
Most people don't know. So what happened was, when was this? Was this like 2016 or 2015? Dogecoin was created just for fun, right? So what they did was they had a inflation schedule that that didn't work because it inflated really quickly initially. So it was like giving away like something like 1 million coins a day or something or every block initially. So a lot of the it kept cutting every 2 months, cutting half every 2 months. And near the end, the inflation was so low that it wouldn't be enough to provide security for the coin. And because it was also using script mining, it competed with Litecoin. So by then, it would be very easy to 51% attack the coin, like costing a few hundred dollars. So I proposed to the Dogecoin community to do merge mining with Litecoin so that Litecoin pools can also, or Litecoin miners can also mine Dogecoin at the same time. And there was a lot of pushback initially, but eventually they decided that that was the best thing to do. So they hard forked in merge mining. And then from then on, pretty much every Litecoin miner was mining Dogecoin on the side and getting an extra little side income. But today, actually, Dogecoin makes up more mining rewards than Litecoin. So effectively, Dogecoin is protecting Litecoin. So it's a nice like symbiotic relationship between Litecoin and Dogecoin, where the miners are protecting both coins at the same time.
How does the actual concept of merge mining work for those of us not really familiar with the mining world?
The idea is that one coin is the so-called the main coin for the merge mining. So Litecoin is the main coin and Dogecoin is kind of being merged mined with Litecoin. What that means is Dogecoin blocks accept the proof of work for a Litecoin block as a valid Dogecoin block. That's basically all that is. So that's why Dogecoin needed to hard fork. Needed hard fork such that it would accept a Litecoin proof of work as also a valid Dogecoin block.
Okay. I remember in 2017, and I know all this is going on again, but for some reason I'm not seeing it as much, but there was a lot of talk about GPUs and like really identifying what the best stuff to mine was and which ones had merge mining mixed in. So you could get like a little piece of the cred while you were mining something else and, you know, yada, yada. What's the mining landscape like for Litecoin? Is it all GPUs or are there a bunch of ASICs?
It's pretty much all ASICs now. Okay. Back then when Bitcoin switched to ASICs, almost all the GPUs went to mine Litecoin. It was kind of a nice transition where Litecoin went from CPU to GPU at about the same time when Bitcoin went from GPU to ASICs. But since then, ASICs for Litecoin came out, and that's dominating the Litecoin mining scene. And the script ASICs can be used for mining Litecoin and Dogecoin and a few other coins. So most pools mine Litecoin and a few other merge mineable coins. Script merge mineable coins at the same time. The crazy thing is right now, like for example, Litecoin pool is paying out 400% the paper hash value. So because of Dogecoin, previously it was like whatever 108% or something. It was just an 8% bonus. Now it's actually a 400% of the what you normally expect from mining Litecoin, which is pretty crazy.
Has there been a big evolution of the hardware too? Like, are the same machines that people were using, like with S9s or whatever, back then? Like, can people still profitably mine with those older machines?
Yeah, the past few years there hasn't been a lot of new ASIC development for Litecoin, mainly because the price has been depressed for these few years. So I would expect to see newer hardware coming out soon. But yeah, the old machines are still profitable. Nice. And obviously, given the recent rise in price and the Dogecoin rise in price, it's actually quite profitable now, I would say.
Yeah. All right, I'm done talking about mining, Kobe.
Does that mean all the people that were mining Litecoin all this time are all like Doge rich now?
Possibly, but I do know a lot of miners sell the Doge right away, sell it for Litecoin or for other coins. I don't know if they still do that right now. But for example, Litecoin pool, if you join that with your script ASIC miner, you only get Litecoin. So they will sell the Dogecoin for LTC.
Got it. And did you ever interact with the man, the myth, the legend, Jackson Palmer?
I have. It's pretty funny because back then he was out there, right, as the creator of Dogecoin.
Yeah.
And the other co-creator, Brilliant Marcus, was kind of in the background and no one really knew about him. And then Jackson Palmer kind of disappeared a few years ago, and he hasn't really shown his face anymore. And now Billy Marcus has come out, and he's kind of like the face of Dogecoin now, which is pretty cool.
Do we know what Jackson's like peak number of Doge was? Like, were his wallets public? Because he sold all his Doge back when it was really cheap, right?
That's what people think, or that's what he said, right? So he was never really a big believer in Dogecoin becoming something. So I don't think he ever owned any coins. And I think he might be quite bitter because he doesn't own any, and now
Dogecoin is so popular. He's just like showing up to work at Adobe every day and like I'm an engineer at Adobe. I used to have, you know, $500 million worth of Doge, but now I don't. Like he's probably got friends.
He's a marketing guy at Adobe.
Whatever he does.
Yeah.
He's got a job.
I would till off the face of the earth. Because what's the Dogecoin market cap is what? Let's see. I'm guessing it's like 80 billion. 80 billion. All right, market cap 78 billion. So 80 billion. Even if you only had 1% of coins, I would till off the face of the earth. It's not often that you create something that grows to even $1 billion in value. $80 billion and owning none of it. And now he can't escape it, right? Because like when he like sort of tilted and disappeared way back when, at least he could escape it. People don't always talk about Dogecoin on the street in normal times. It's not always on SNL. It's not like, you know, not like everyone's trying to meme it into being the currency of the internet. So you could sort of like get away from it and like, yeah, maybe I missed out on a couple of $1 million, whatever, but I've got a good job and I'll get on with my life. Now the richest man in the world is shilling it on SNL and like tweeting about it every single day. He can't hide anymore. I would tilt off the face of the earth. If I was him now, I would just come back. I would announce my return because like the community will give him $10 million at least. At least he'll get $10 million in a single day if he returns to his creation. But he's the most principled man ever. He's like, no, I didn't believe in it then, and I still don't believe in it now. Maybe it's too embarrassing for him to come back, but he's holding off on a $10 million cash in. That's incredible.
You know, Kobe, it would be like really cool if we had a founder who'd sold all his coins that we could ask, like, how would they feel? So Charlie, like, I mean, you had to make this decision because you were constantly asked about price, and the price became more of a pressure than, I guess, the project is kind of what you like focusing on the project itself. So can you walk us through, like, what was your decision to sell your coins, and like, how do you think about price today?
So price became quite a bit of a distraction back in 2017. It was kind of a conflict for me when I'm like talking about Litecoin, promoting Litecoin, whether I'm doing it because I want the coin to succeed or whether I'm doing it because I just want to pump my own bags. So at that point, I just decided I had two choices to make. I could either stop promoting it and just kind of let it be, or I can keep promoting it, keep working on it, but then sell my coin so that I don't have this conflict. And I decided to do the latter. The one thing I shouldn't have done is just announce it to the world that I did it. I thought transparency is the best thing, right? So if I decide to do something, I just tell the world I'm doing it. But then I got trolled for nonstop for 4 years. So hopefully this will stop getting trolled, but I don't see that happening.
So the argument that people made at the time was basically like, you're not incentivized to care about the project. And your point was, I'm incentivized because my name is on it. Like, I'm still a backer, the creator of this project. So that's incentive enough. Do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it was.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So, I mean, Litecoin is my creation. It's kind of my baby. It's my legacy, right? So if it does well, like, I would be, I mean, there's plenty of incentive for me to help Litecoin succeed. There's money was never incentive for me because I'm early Bitcoin, right? So it's not like Litecoin, my holdings in Litecoin actually moved the needle at all for me.
That was such quite a gangster. That was quite a gangster statement. That was quite, yeah, I sold the top, but it didn't really move the needle for me because I'm so fucking rich.
Well, not that. More like I didn't actually have that many Litecoins to start with, right? So it wasn't pre-mined. So it's not like Vitalik with $1 billion worth of Ethereum because he kind of just created out of thin air and gave himself a bunch, right? So with Litecoin, just like anyone else, I had to buy or mine Litecoins. I'm just like a normal investor, right? I didn't create coins out of thin air to give myself, right? And then another thing people don't realize is, or don't understand, is they keep comparing Litecoin to normal companies where, for example, like Elon Musk has a lot of Tesla shares because for one, he's paid to increase shareholder value, right? That's his job, to increase the price of Tesla stock. Whereas from my point of view, that's not my job. My job is not to create, like to make LTC worth more. My job is to help Litecoin succeed no matter what the price is, right? So the price going up and down doesn't really kind of affect Litecoin's success. Obviously everyone most people who are investing in it want the price to go up. But my job is, I think, I want Litecoin to succeed, right? I want Litecoin to be on all exchanges, to be accepted everywhere, to be used, to have lots of wallets supporting it, to have a stable network, and all that stuff is really unrelated to the price. So the price is kind of a distraction for me.
Do you think you would have got trolled more if you sold the top or if you sold early? Like if you sold and it was not the top and it kept going up, it went 10x. Do you think you would have got trolled more then? Or you would have got trolled more for selling the top?
I think I would have got trolled like either way, but different kind of trolling, right? So, I mean, when I eventually sold, the price still went up for a week or two afterwards. If people wanted to kind of exit because they didn't like the fact that I sold all my coins, they could have done that like that on that day, right? Or that week, and they would have gotten the higher price than I did. But that's not the point, right? The point is people just afterwards, because the whole market crashed, they just like to blame it on me for crashing the whole market.
Yeah, now like, yeah. I can put it on CryptoWatch, you know, and like just like pop it there on the weekly chart. And it looks like it was the dead top, even though at the time, like things kind of slow down in a way at the top of the market.
I actually thought the price would keep going up, right? I wasn't trying to time the top. it was pretty crazy back then. I mean, you guys like probably felt that then too, right? The price of Litecoin or Bitcoin, everyone thought it was going to be $1,000 for Litecoin, and I just decided this is the right time to just sell everything and then it didn't go to $1,000, obviously in hindsight. Now we're going to $1,000.
Yeah. Just from a pure chart perspective, usually, you know, if you break an all time high, like you're going to see price exploration and some opportunity from there. So, you know, you talked about you don't want price to be a distraction from the success of the network. But in a network like this, the price does play a role, right? Because there's the total market cap and then there's people's incentive to do something like a 51% attack if they were wanting to attack the network. According at least to the crypto51.app website, it's about $30,000 per 1 hour of attacking to attack Litecoin.
That site is interesting, but the number is not the full picture, right?
So yeah, that's what I want to know. What is the full picture of attacking Litecoin and how the price plays a part in that?
Yeah, so to attack Litecoin, you have to get 51% of the miners, right, or of the hash rate, or close to that. So there's not enough like hash rate that can be rented to attack Litecoin, like some other smaller coins. So you need to buy ASICs or somehow rent a lot of ASICs, enough to so that you can attack the network. The cost of buying those ASICs is in the like 8-9 figures, right? Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Okay, so once you spend that, then you could attack it for $30,000 an hour.
Yeah, and I mean, Satoshi's design is that if you did spend that money for the hash rate, you have no incentive to attack it because you're going to destroy your income, right? You're killing the goose that lays the golden egg, so to speak.
Yeah.
So there's no incentive to attack it once you have the hash rate. So that's what's protecting Litecoin and also Bitcoin, right? But Bitcoin is obviously much larger in terms of the cost to attack Bitcoin. I think the security for Litecoin and Dogecoin is actually a lot higher than we actually need at this point. So I'm not worried about the security at all. I think you're right that price does need to kind of go higher for this to become a useful currency, right? You need a lot of money in the whole. The market cap has to be big enough to absorb like large money movements, right? To absorb people exchanging from Litecoin to US dollar to fiat currency back and forth without moving the price. So like if the whole market cap is only $100 million, you can't really like trade $1 million or $10 million worth of Litecoin without really moving the price. So yeah, so for Litecoin to succeed, eventually the price has to go up for the whole market cap to be big enough.
Yeah. And that's not what you said. Like Ethereum Classic, as an example, might be a much stronger candidate to be cheaply attacked, right? Because it's basically a broader spectrum of machines can mine it and bring power to doing that. And it's been attacked a couple of times. So like, do you think that's a good example of where the security of the network and the price of the coin have kind of come unattached?
Ethereum Classic has been attacked like two or three times. I mean, a serious like 51% attack with rollbacks and everything.
Like, I think Coinbase is requiring like 10,000 confirmations or something for Ethereum Classic right now.
So the thing is, I forget what the algorithm ETC uses these days.
I don't think anyone knows. I don't think there's a single developer in the world that knows the answer to that question.
Are they using the same as Ethereum? Is it like Edhash or something else? But anyways, there's enough like hash power out there that you can rent it on like NiceHash or somewhere else where you can actually use that to attack the network for whatever, $1,000 an hour or something like that. Something crazy, crazily easy to do. So yeah, so in order for a coin to be secure, it has to kind of dominate the algorithm that it's using, right? It needs likely ASICs, so that you need specialized hardware to mine the coin. So if it's GPU mineable and then easily nice hashable, then you can, anyone with money, you can just rent the hash rate to attack the coin.
Yeah.
Is NiceHash still available? Is still around?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh my God. That brings back some memories. Back in the good old days, the way to trade new altcoins was just to go on to the to see what was like really expensive to rent on NiceHash. Like, there's no hash left on this algorithm. Search around Bitcoin Talk for the algorithm that had newly been launched, and then go look at the pools and just to see someone's name. Like, if Angelo was there, was like all the machines blazing at one coin, that was it. You got to go all in. You've got to join him in my shit.
0x4c, our VIP mod, said that there's some rug pull concerns on NiceHash, apparently. I don't really know what that means.
Don't use NiceHash, just in case. Yeah. And if you do use it, don't blame me or Ledger or Charlie.
So Charlie, like, I mean, one of the advantages of talking to you is you're one of the like OG crypto engineers. You've played a lot of roles in the ecosystem between Bitcoin and Litecoin development. You were the CTO of Coinbase. So what do you find interesting technically in the market these days? What are you excited about?
Well, first of all, I was the director of engineering at Coinbase.
Whatever. Sorry, yeah. I promoted you. So what do you find interesting right now?
To be honest, I'm focused on Litecoin, and what we're doing with Litecoin is adding MWeb, which is a fungibility privacy improvement to Litecoin using Mimblewimble technology with extension blocks. I don't know how familiar you guys are with what I just talked about.
Mimblewimble's privacy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, like me, very large brain, know exactly what you mean. However, for the benefit of the chat, who are all very dumb, Can you give an explain like I'm five that I'll listen to as well? Yeah. But so just it's not for me because I already know so what you mean.
You just said all your listeners are dumb.
Yeah. They know. They're aware.
It's part of the role.
So one thing I realized early on with Bitcoin is that it's pretty much like a perfect form of money, except for one thing, which is fungibility, right? Which is like there's history involved with your coins. They're not coins aren't very fungible. So you hear stories of people sending some coins from darknet marketplace to Coinbase, and then Coinbase saw that and they banned their accounts. So which makes it not fungible, which means it's not very good money, right? If you go to a store and you look at your wallet, you have like $5 trillion bills. You have to decide which one to use because they're not exactly the same. Then it's not very good money. So that's one thing that's missing from Bitcoin. And there are ways that to improve that with second layer, with like Lightning and other things. But I want to do something different with Litecoin, right? To try to improve it on the main chain, so to speak, but it's actually similar to a side chain, which is the extension block. So a technology that came out a few years ago was Mimblewimble, right? So there are a few coins that use Mimblewimble. There's Grin and there's Beam and there's one called Mimblewimble Coin, I think.
RIP Grin.
Those coins aren't doing well price wise, but the technology is very cool. Right? It's a way to add fungibility and privacy. I mean, it's not perfect fungibility privacy, but it's pretty good. It's better than what Bitcoin Litecoin has right now, without adding that, without sacrificing scalability. One of the things, the main thing with all these other like fungibility privacy improvements with like, for example, Zcash and Monero, is that they're not very scalable, right? They private transactions are whatever, 20 times, sometimes 100 times the size of regular transactions. So it also takes a lot of CPU to generate them. So people don't use them and they bloat the blockchain. So Mimblewimble is a good kind of compromise with fungibility and scalability.
Do you think that's the future of privacy in crypto, like bringing privacy to the primary coins? Or do you think, like the Zcash pick your privacy per transaction thing has real legs?
I think the main coins would need to have some like better fungibility and privacy. Whether that's through something like MWeb or it's through like Lightning Network or other improvements. I think there's going to be improvements on all these aspects. I don't think like a privacy-focused coin is going to become mainstream. But I do think Monero is pretty good in terms of it's going towards the direction of just full privacy, right? Every transaction is private. It's not opt-in. So people who are using Monero, they get all the privacy, right?
They get all the benefits of using it as money.
Correct. But except that it's not very liquid, right? It's not on all the exchanges. It's hard to get in and out. But once you're in Monero, then it's all good, right? Once you have your money in Monero. But obviously not everyone, it's not accepted everywhere. So it's good for person to person transactions.
I'd love to ask a little bit about the rise of proof of stake and how in this cycle it feels like everything is proof of stake and everything new that is getting launched is proof of stake or delegated proof of stake or whatever. And how proof of work has maybe taken like a reputational hit, perhaps because of the people on Twitter who don't like the climate being damaged by NFT creators, or I'm not sure. As an OG, a crypto OG who mined alongside Satoshi and high-fived him in a slow motion action sequence before creating.
I've actually not talk to Satoshi. When I joined the scene, Satoshi was already gone.
We know that you high-fived him in a slow motion action scene. I watched it on YouTube. How do you feel about
Charlie
this?
Lee is in fact the only person in the world that knows Satoshi's identity. You heard it here first.
Yeah. How do you feel about this rise of proof of stake? Do you think it's like bad for crypto generally? Do you think there'll be a whip back around to proof of work eventually?
Well, I think proof of work is what is innovative about this whole kind of whole space in the first place, right? So even before Bitcoin, proof of stake was around, right? There are proof of stake. The idea of proof of stake has been around for a long time. Even so, what Bitcoin, what Satoshi brought that's new to the table is proof of work with blockchain. So that's what makes it interesting for me. So proof of stake is not very interesting for me. I think there are some, the attack surface is very different. I don't think it's good for money, but it could be good for Ethereum, for example. So for other things that don't need the security and the censorship resistance of money, I think proof of stake could work. But it's not very kind of interesting to me. I'm more interested in proof of work money, like Bitcoin and Litecoin and other coins.
Do you think?
Why do you think?
Go ahead. Go
after
ahead.
You ledge.
Do you think after it's you because? Ledge. Do you think it's because proof of stake evolves towards few parties having control of the stake network, like Lido Finance and various exchanges might end up holding all the ETH and having the voting power? And if so, is that particularly different than like miners becoming dominant in proof of work?
I do agree. It's partially that, right? It's the people who are in power will keep on having more and more power. It's very similar to what we have, the current system we have today. For one thing, with proof of stake, if the coin started off like decentralized, it's one thing, right? If it started off with one central party having like whatever 70-80% of the coins to start with, and then it's a proof of stake coin, then it's like it's kind of just one person or one group in power, and they keep holding power, right? Which is kind of silly for a decentralized cryptocurrency. Yes, what am I trying to get at? So it's just in most of these cases, it's not very exciting because it's not decentralized. It's kind of pretending to be decentralized, but and it's a centralized. It's one company or one group of party controlling the majority of the currency, and then they're in control effectively because of proof of stake. Their coins, they have full control of the network, so they can do whatever they want.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. The narrative within the landscape of proof of stake and, well, really like any of these like VC-backed projects or whatever is decentralization over time. So it sounds like you're just not a believer that that's going to occur.
Yeah, I mean, history has shown when you have power, you don't just give it up easily.
Gotcha. Right. But you don't think it's the same threat with mining, like where a handful of parties control mining of a particular coin, that it's a similar threat?
It's a little bit different, where mining is more competitive, right? So it's everyone has equal footing. Anyone can get into mining. You just have to find cheap electricity and be able to get access to the hardware or build their own, right? So it's a little bit different. I think it's more fair. It's more decentralized for I think proof of work is better in that aspect.
Gotcha. Kobe, where were you going?
Can't remember, mate. It was long ago now. It was at least 30 seconds ago. My memory attention span is like 30 seconds and then it's done.
That's my bad. You got to go first next time. You got to go first. People want to know your questions, not mine.
And then you've been like relatively vocally anti-Ethereum and maybe not anti-Ethereum, but anti a lot of like what's happening in the Ethereum ecosystem. What's like your like core principles behind that? Is it that there was, you know, the pre-mine and the ICO, and it was maybe one of the first ones that sort of made that model popular, or is it a centralization issue?
I mean, I'm not a big Ethereum hater. I have few things, like you said, I have few issues with it. The pre-mine obviously is a big thing for a lot of people, right? Ethereum Foundation pre-mined whatever it is, like 60% of the coins, and they sold it as an, it's like the first successful ICO. And obviously people who bought in on at the ICO did really well. But in the end, there's just, it's not very fair, right? For it to become like a very decentralized cryptocurrency, the start wasn't very fair. That's one thing I did with Litecoin, which is to make, try to make it as fair as possible, where the launch was announced ahead of time. Everyone had a chance to mine at the beginning. It's kind of similar to Bitcoin, where it's a fair launch. The other thing is, the other issue I had with Ethereum was the DAO hard fork. Right? I thought that they screwed up, whoever created, I mean, it's not, there's nothing wrong with the Ethereum, if the Ethereum network itself, it was just one smart contract, one large smart contract that got hacked. So in my opinion, they should have just let it alone. People who lost money deserved it. And actually I lost money on that too. I invested some Ethereum into the DAO without looking at the code, which is my fault. So I think you should get punished for that, right? And people would learn, right? It's like if you get scammed and then you get your money back, then you never learn your lesson.
There are people on this call that don't even know what happened. Can you give like the very short version of the DAO hack and fork?
Can you include when they hung out with Paris Hilton in this story?
What? Did they really hang out with Paris Hilton?
Yeah, okay, there was that photo that went on Instagram with Paris's Instagram of all the DAO founders and Paris Hilton at dinner. I was like, is this bullish or bearish? I don't know.
Was that before the hack or after the hack?
I don't know. I can't remember.
So what happened was there was this one group that created this thing they call the DAO, which is a decentralized autonomous organization. The idea is that there's this whole smart contract, complicated smart contract that governs the money that people send to the DAO. And then the smart contract would, based on people voting with however much money they send in, they can vote on what project the smart contract will invest in. So it's kind of like a fund where it would just grow based off of investment. So a lot of people send money in. I think it was like $150 million, something like that. It's not that much in today's picture, but it was, I think it was like 30% of all ETH in existence was sent to the DAO. And then someone found a bug in the code where they just basically stole all the money for themselves. And then the community came together, and then Vitalik and others made a decision to roll back the, or it's not really a rollback, they made the decision to lock the funds from the hacker's address and then redistribute it to people who invest in it. So it's basically like a state change, right? They made a hard fork of a state change that moved money. And when that happened, that's what happened. That's when the Ethereum Classic fork came about. The Ethereum Classic was the chain that didn't have the rollback, right, so to speak. So that's when the Ethereum forked away from Ethereum Classic. And so, yeah, that's what happened.
That's a pretty.
Did the hacker ever sell their Ethereum Classic?
I actually don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm going to investigate that.
Did they sell the ETH? All right, no, the ETH was locked. They kept the Ethereum Classic. I gotcha.
Yeah. I remember that. I was like borderline Bitcoin maxi back in those days. At least one of the fake Bitcoin maxis where they just like trade alts to stack Bitcoin. And I remember that happening and being like, I'm going to join the Ethereum Classic side. This is like, I believe in Ethereum Classic more than Ethereum now. And I quickly got over it, and I'm glad I did because I might be down there with Barry.
you'd be happy today because Ethereum Classic had a huge pump the past couple of days.
Yeah, you just that's why been pissed I wonder off for 4 years.
More like 6 years. But yeah, I mean, I was kind of in the same camp. I thought Ethereum, the team was making a bad decision to do that because I think nothing would have really, it would have been just fine if they just let it be. Ethereum won't die because of the hack. It's kind of like when Mt. Gox went down or when the Silk Road went down, Bitcoin didn't die because of it. So Ethereum wasn't going to die because of this one little hack. But they set a precedence that they basically had control, right? They had effectively, they can do whatever they want. which is a bad sign for me, right? So that's what people are kind of complaining about today, which is Ethereum Foundation and Vitalik pretty much have control over the network. They can do, it might not be 100% true, but they still have a ton of influence over it.
I think this gets into a pretty interesting conversation around like people versus code. I've seen this happen in the web space where a project was forked and there might be an idealistic reason why you should go with the code, like the code version that you believe in, right? In this case, maybe the idealism of Ethereum Classic, but the people followed the leader. Right, like what Vitalik said. So the belief was much more in Vitalik and the people involved than like whatever their ethics may be with the code. And to me,
it's,
go ahead.
A little bit different than Bitcoin, right? So
that's what I was leading into. It's like the role, like it really hints at how important it was that Satoshi stepped aside.
Yeah. So with Ethereum, the value of the currency of the network. Most of it came from the team, right? The Ethereum Foundation team and Vitalik, right? So Ethereum Classic didn't have that support, so it became a kind of a cheaper version, a fork of Ethereum, and it's much less supported, right? And the value is much less because of that. Even though I think the ideology behind it is much stronger than to be able to just fork and return funds from a hack, right? That's what central banks do, right? That's what having some people in control of saying whose money this belongs to, right? Which is not, I don't think that's good for cryptocurrency, but that's not the point. The point is that Ethereum with Vitalik and Ethereum Foundation actually has more value. And that's something that, like you, Kobe, I didn't understand initially. And I really supported Ethereum Classic, but then now I can see the reason why Ethereum has a lot more value than Ethereum Classic. And with Bitcoin, you see the previous dev team losing power because they want to do something that the community did not support, which is to hard fork to 2 megabytes or doing 8 megabyte hard fork or whatever it is, right? And that's something that's special with Bitcoin, which is the ideology behind Bitcoin is a lot stronger. Yeah, so if you want to change the $21 million Bitcoin limit, that's not going to happen with Bitcoin. But with Ethereum, the foundation decides to cut the mining rewards in half, and it just happens. Whatever it is, just happens.
I think that is true. I think if you are looking for the most, you know, censorship resistant, trustless money that can reclaim your sovereignty and separate money from state or whatever bad actor, Bitcoin is by far your best bet, has been your best bet since any other coin was created. Bitcoin has remained superior in that regard. It's not necessarily an investment thesis. Like, of course, when Ethereum cuts the mining rewards by half, the supply and demand equation is very simple to figure out what happens to the price from something like that. But I agree, from like a philosophical point of view, like Bitcoin does remain the superior asset, and I think that's why Bitcoin always performs better on the downside than everything else, because you don't have to think about it so much. You can just leave your money there. You know it's going to be the same thing in a few years. So I do think that makes sense. While we're talking about changes to chains, how do you feel about the Rubin proposed OPCTV change? The dev community seems a bit skeptical about it. Is it going to be a Litecoin thing too?
Possibly. I think it's a pretty interesting proposal. I think we're definitely willing to experiment with it. I do think, like, Bitcoin, the community is kind of focused on Taproot first. Once that is out, I think they'll be more open to doing something else. Do more stuff in addition to that, right? So that's why it's kind of getting a lot of pushback initially, not because it's a bad proposal. I think it's just because they want focus to be on Taproot, getting that out first before doing something else.
And is like, how does, because a lot of the time back in the day, I saw Litecoin as the chain that can do experimental stuff, sort of like the testnet for Bitcoin, do experimental stuff, do things that are a bit weird, make some changes that maybe the Bitcoin community was against, and they get to like see how it plays out in production. Do you still see Litecoin fulfilling that role? So is this something that you could like accelerate on and do quicker than Bitcoin and say, look, it seems to be good? Or is it, have you seen Litecoin's like sort of place in the ecosystem change over time?
I think it always has that role. It can step up when it needs to. So for example, with like SegWit 4 years ago, it activated on Litecoin first, and it was able to prove that there's no issue with it, right? Before SegWit activated on Litecoin, there was all this FUD out there about anyone can spend, about stuff that miners can easily attack it. It's a very dangerous upgrade for Bitcoin. And once it activated on Litecoin, and there's like millions of dollars worth of Litecoin in the SegWit addresses, and no one was able to steal from it, all that FUD just kind of blew away, like disappeared, because you can't really FUD anymore when there's something active, an active network that with a decent size, right? So you can't really test this stuff on testnet. Like, you can test that to make sure that transactions work. You can create the SegWit transactions you spend from SegWit addresses and stuff like that. But you can't really test the game theory aspect of Bitcoin on testnet, because there's no money involved, right? And there needs to be money involved to have incentives for someone to attack the network and to hurt it, right? And Litecoin was able to prove that it actually functioned properly with any issues.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I always liked Litecoin because of that. And also, when I was at university, I told all of my friends to buy Bitcoin. They had a massive unit bias thing. They were like, Bitcoin's too expensive. It's 400. Look at Litecoin. It's one. Way back then, I learned every lesson I needed to know about retail trading.
Now Litecoin is 300 and Dogecoin is less than one. So,
yeah. And how do you feel about the Bitcoin Cash recent EVM sidechain stuff? So I read about it not long ago. Suzu sent me a Telegram DM and was like, have you seen this?
Also a flex.
And yeah, I was like, I don't like it. Like I said, I sent it to two developers that I know who are like godlike. And I was like, is this good? I need to sound smart in front of Sue. So they were like, here's exactly what I would say. I merged their comments together and pasted them back to him. But they seem to be launching an EVM sidechain called Smart BCH. I have looked into it like a little bit over the last week since I found out about it. How do you feel about it? Like, do you think this is going to be something like more chains are going to be launching EVM sidechains, or... it's just nonsense for a pump.
To be honest, I haven't been following Bitcoin Cash much at all. So
I don't think anyone has.
I'm not familiar with. I think I've heard the term smart BCH once. I don't know anything about it.
It probably wasn't describing investors at BCH.
Well, it's an oxymoron, so I didn't really pay too much attention to that. From what you said, I assume it's a sidechain that has Ethereum virtual machine, so you can run yep. Ethereum smart contracts on it. I'm not sure what the point of doing that is, because just use Ethereum, right? Or
you heard it here.
I think it's this sort of trend that started by the Binance Smart Chain, where. Or maybe started by Tron, where if you have a EVM chain that uses your collateral from somewhere else, so uses BCH as collateral, then you can play like Ponzi games with BCH as collateral, which raises demand for BCH over time or something.
Well, there was even this idea on Bitcoin. I can't remember the name of the project, but somebody was raising money to try to bring like compute and smart contract stuff to Bitcoin in some capacity.
RSK, right?
Yeah, that was it.
Stock on Bitcoin, which is similar. I'm not sure how much traction that's gaining.
I don't think very much.
Yeah, so this is like Smart BCH is no different, but it's kind of a similar thing, but on a much smaller network. Right? So
why do you think there hasn't been too much traction for like DeFi on Bitcoin?
Same thing, right? Why don't you just use Ethereum?
Well, because of the decentralization and fair launch type of stuff you just talked about, wouldn't it be idealistically better on Bitcoin?
But you don't really need that for something that's not money, right? So I've always said that Ethereum's biggest competitor is someone like Amazon or Google coming in with their centralized solution that does smart contracts.
But then why do you need a blockchain at all?
For money, right? You want money to be centralized.
No, existing. Not for money. Like,
you don't. You don't.
Right? Okay.
You don't really need, you don't necessarily need it. You need it for certain stuff applications. Like if you really need censorship resistant, so if you're like a gambling application or something that will get censored, you want something to protect that, right? You want a blockchain to protect that. But for other, for like CryptoKitties or whatever, you're just trading like NFTs, it doesn't really matter that much if it's on the Amazon.
So is there a difference in your mind between censorship resistance and how to achieve that and decentralization? Aren't they kind of hand in hand?
Yeah, you need decentralization for censorship resistance.
Okay, so if you're going for censorship resistance, and that might be bringing compute or, you know, gambling, whatever, to a network like Ethereum, you don't think that accomplishes decentralization? Like, you don't think, you really don't think like Ethereum is decentralized today?
No, I do think it's decentralized. I think there is censorship resistance, but with that comes a price, right? That's why Ethereum fees are so high. It costs more to have something that's decentralized because it's replicating the same thing over thousands of nodes, right? So,
but the layer two concepts should fix some of that, and theoretically achieve decentralization in a similar way to what Lightning is trying to do with Bitcoin for payments. Correct.
Correct. Should.
Should. Yeah. But what are your thoughts on that? Like from a scalability, and can they accomplish this? What the trilemma or whatever?
To be honest, I'm not paying full attention to what they're doing. I think definitely the work is being done to make it more scalable with second layer, similar to Lightning on Bitcoin.
But do you think that's being accomplished on the layer two side for Bitcoin, like Ethereum aside?
Yes, I do. It's just slow, right? So people are working hard on Lightning. I think it's still, a lot of it is UX, right? Just to make it easy for people to use it. There's also a trade-off, right? There's the trade-off of ease of use versus security, and also the cost, right? How much does it cost to get onto the second layer, and how easy it is to use it.
Yeah, I do think the user experience is like extremely tragic right now.
I'm pretty much anywhere, Tanya.
What's that?
I don't know, because like I used to think that, but then someone created MetaMask, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, this sort of feels like something you could use. You go to a site and you just click connect and you're good. But a bunch of the Lightning Network stuff is like. Like really, really subpar.
It's really complicated to describe like channel liquidity and being on both sides of it. And like, it's actually difficult to actually get on Lightning and then be able to do anything. There's a little bit of a catch-22 with the liquidity that's required in the channels. I still don't really get it personally.
Yeah, I think that if that improves, there can be a lot more traction there. I think it is a huge blocker. So I've seen in chat a lot of spam about something I don't know what it is. So I might be getting trolled. So if this is something offensive, I apologize in advance. But Kushti Crypto and then someone else, I'm not going to scroll up because it moves too fast. Does Charlie have anything to say about the Velvet fork on Litecoin?
What they're talking about is is something to do with Cardano, where Litecoin.
Oh god, I did get trolled. No! The stream.
it's a way where it's a proposal where you can move Litecoin onto the Cardano network to use Cardano's smart contracts.
Exactly what everyone's aiming to do.
Yeah, it's something like we're looking into, but in the end, it's something that decided by the community or by the miners, whether or not they want to fork Litecoin, like a soft fork of Litecoin, to add this ability to move Litecoin onto the Cardano network.
I can't believe I got trolled by Christian Crypto to bring up Cardano. all right, can we ban Christian Crypto from it? He can no longer
just
watch.
Just time him out for like half an hour.
how have you been following much of this like Ethereum killers like war between like Solana and BCSC and BSC, oh my god, and Cardano and Polkadot and Avalanche and, you know, blah blah blah.
I haven't been following that much. I do know that I do know a little bit about BSC. I think BSC definitely has a shot because it's more of a, I always thought that a more centralized solution for smart contract makes more sense. So it wasn't Google or Amazon, but it's now Binance, which is also a big player in the space. And they're coming out, they have a smart contract or EVM compatible solution where they kind of have more control and the fees are lower because of that. It's more centralized, but nothing wrong with that for a smart contract platform to have something that's more centralized.
But to the question earlier, can they achieve censorship resistance in that more centralized ecosystem?
No, like they can censor it, right? Binance can censor stuff. So,
but can't their hand also be forced? Like
their hands can be forced, but for 99% of what you use smart contract for today, censorship resistance doesn't matter, right? So like you're not, if I'm just trading NFTs, I'm not that worried about the government coming in to say I can't send this NFT to someone else or something like that, right? So it's not, if I'm paying like 1/100th of the fees to do NFTs on BSC versus Ethereum, I would do it. Right.
Yeah. And how do you feel about NFTs in general? I think I read a tweet thread from you about NFTs. Are you not a large believer in a digital scarcity of art or collectibles?
I'm a believer in digital scarcity, but only if there is value, intrinsic value of that thing, right? So, well, not intrinsic value, but if there's value. So, like for artwork NFTs, I'm not a big believer in that. I think it's a fad. The value is in the artwork itself, not the NFT. So the NFT is effectively like a certificate of authenticity. So like some things like where someone took a Banksy artwork, created, minted an NFT for it, and then like burned the original and tried to say the value is now in an NFT. I think that's just kind of very stupid. But for some stuff with NFTs where, like if it's a game, a popular game where they're using NFT to enforce that it's a unique, rare item, I think something like that could be very cool and valuable because there's value in the game, right? So if you have like, whatever, Diablo or some other game where like this unique sword, there's only one copy of it and it gives you this much power in the game and it's worth $10,000 because it's really cool collectible and it actually is useful, I can see that being popular. Yeah.
So imagine losing your private key for the one like ultimate god sword. everyone in the world that plays this game now hates you. So I'm sorry. My bad.
Yeah. It's still on the blockchain. It's right here, but
I still have a couple of questions that I want to make sure we get in. One is, I think you and Fluffy Pony in particular have really like threaded the needle on being able to maintain or create, you know, be a central person within an altcoin ecosystem and also kind of maintain your credibility card amongst like traditional crypto OGs, primarily Bitcoiners, and at least some segment of Bitcoin maxis. Like, how have you managed to do that? And
well, it's not like a goal I set out to do. It's not. I'm just being myself, and whatever happens, happens, right? So, I don't think it's something that I try to thread the needle to be popular among both Bitcoin and shitcoin people.
But do you have any speculation in terms of like how you've managed to maintain your reputation over the years? Because I mean, this is maybe a question for both of y'all, because, you know, whatever the, there's these sayings about, you know, if you're in an ecosystem long enough, you either become like a meme or an enemy or whatever that is.
Yeah.
That's the direct quote from The Dark Knight. Well done. In The Dark Knight, he goes, if you're in a space long enough, you become a meme or an enemy.
Yeah.
That is the direct quote from The Dark Knight movie. Yeah.
I think what's key is that I'm not like attacking Bitcoin, right? I'm not saying like Litecoin is a better Bitcoin. I'm not like, I mean, I think Bitcoin is still king, right? So I'm still supporting Bitcoin. I think Bitcoin is still the best cryptocurrency out there. But on the other side, I think Litecoin can help Bitcoin in certain ways, right? With like, for example, with launching SegWit first, with doing being a valuable testnet, and stuff like what I'm working on with mWeb on Litecoin. I don't think Bitcoin will adopt it. I think it's a bit too controversial for Bitcoin, but it's a good way to kind of try something different and to see how that works on a different network. It's something that Bitcoin, it won't happen on Bitcoin. Like, so it's cool that there's coins like Litecoin where we can try something different and see how that works.
Yeah, I think also because you did a fair launch and like more bought or mined your own coins, I think that helps a lot. I think a lot of the Bitcoin maxi arguments are against things that exploit the space that has gained attention because of Bitcoin, because of Satoshi's creation, in order for personal profit. And there is like a fine line there between like creating something that adds value and acts as like a testnet for Bitcoin or whatever, and like using your own capital to buy into stuff versus like turning up in 2020 or 2021 and going, I'm doing an IDO on fucking the 17th Ethereum killer because it's actually a clone of the IDO that was done yesterday on the 16th Ethereum killer, and we haven't changed the code yet, but let's see if it works.
So the quote is, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I think I basically got it right.
Yeah, you're a meme or you're a villain. They should re-edit the movie.
Yeah, they did it wrong.
I'd love to die and be a hero.
I'd love to ask. Like, what are some things that over sort of the last decade have played out so differently to how you thought they'd play out? Because I remember way back when, the early days of crypto, I wasn't really even cognizant that we were like in a thing that was like super important. And like 10 years, we might look back and go, oh, wow. And after my first year, like my first year was just novel and like, this is interesting. After that, I started to understand like, all right, this is going to become more of an industry and blah, blah, blah. And I tried to figure out what the long term of that looks like and how I can align myself to, be as successful as possible given the rapid expansion of the space. And there's a bunch of things that I guessed right and like this worked out well for me, and a bunch of things where I just got it totally wrong, which I'll talk about mine on another day maybe. I'd love to know like which things that just like absolutely came true and you're like, this was obvious from the beginning, and which things were like, I thought this is so different to what I thought would ever happen.
Well, obviously Bitcoin was game true, right? So when I first found out about Bitcoin, I kind of knew right away it's going to be huge. I saw it as like a better form of money, better than gold, better than fiat currencies. Back then, like it was at $30 when I first found out about Bitcoin. It dropped to $2 like in 6 months. it dropped like 90% of its value in 6 months. But I still believed in it, right? So I actually thought my target was $5,000. I thought in 10 years, Bitcoin would be $5,000. And when I told people that, they thought I was crazy, right? It was like $2, it was going to go to $5,000 in 10 years. People thought I was crazy. And it actually exceeded my expectation, right? Now, 10 years later, it's at $50,000, $60,000. So that's pretty crazy. Something that I totally didn't expect. I totally didn't expect Litecoin to be as crazy as it is, to be as popular as it is. Cause I created it just kind of for fun. Mm. I launched it just for fun, right? So I didn't expect anything out of it. So that was totally unexpected.
And was it the first, was like the first altcoin? Because I wasn't there. It's I joined not. A little bit afterwards. It wasn't?
It's not. Namecoin, I think, is the first altcoin. First one that actually, it's probably the first one that was actually launched after Bitcoin. And then there were about a dozen or so before Litecoin launched. And the reason why I launched Litecoin is I thought I could do better than the other dozen coins, especially the fairness part. Every coin, Namecoin, I don't think had a pre-mine, but every coin after that had a pre-mine. Like, was it Xcoin, Solidcoin, Tenebricks, IOCoin? There's a lot of these coins that came out that had like a huge pre-mine and just launched to kind of enrich the founders. So I decided I want to do something that kind of has some of the qualities of the other coins, but without the pre-mine. So launch it as fairly as possible. I think because of that fairness, fair launch, it became more successful than these other coins.
I remember when I used to trade on BTCE before they got governmented. There was a coin on there and it was really controversial, and I didn't know because I was noob. So I just joined and I saw, like, you know, Peercoin, Primecoin, Litecoin, Feathercoin, Bitcoin, and I can't remember what it was called now. I think it began with a V maybe. And there was a coin on there that looked really good because, I don't know, maybe it was cheap or it was the cheapest one or the chart looked the best or something. And I bought it, and then the day after I bought it, I found out that they'd like paid BTCE like millions of dollars to be listed on BTCE, and they'd given them like half of the coin supply, and it just went straight to zero or something. That was my introduction.
It's a coin that was pre-mined, and they used that pre-mine to pay people. There were quite a few back then. It was funny because when I launched Litecoin, you can actually check the BitcoinTalk.org forum posts on the Litecoin launch. One of the first few comments, or many of the first few comments, were saying, like, why do we need another coin? There's no, like, we already have all these a dozen other coins. Why do we need Litecoin? It's crap.
How times have changed. I'd like to ask about the culture at Coinbase and what it was like to work there. You know, they just went public. The chat wants to know, did you sell the top on Coinbase as well? And then, and then more importantly, what was it like to work there and how did it evolve over your tenure, culturally?
I'll answer the popular question first. So I did not sell the top on Coinbase. Because we haven't reached the top yet. I'm still waiting for us to reach the top first before I sell it.
Can you let us know?
Sure, I'll let you know. Actually, the stock price has dropped quite a bit since launch. It's at 250 now, which is crazy. I didn't expect it to drop this much. But I'm holding on to it. I'm waiting for the top. What was the culture like? So I joined Coinbase in 2013, I think. Yeah, in mid 2013. Was it? I forget. it was a while ago. As like the second employee. Third employee.
Yeah.
After the founders. Second engineer. It was a small team. It was a startup, right? It just started. It was doing fairly well. People were hearing about it. It was like the only place, the first place where people can buy and sell Bitcoin in the US with their bank account, right? They didn't have to wire money or send money via Dwolla to some bank in Japan or somewhere else to buy Bitcoins. And the reason why I joined Coinbase is because I always thought that for Bitcoin to succeed, people had to be able to easily buy and sell Bitcoin, right? And Coinbase was the first, it was like the way to do it back then, or it was starting to become very useful, very popular. So I wanted to help out in that aspect. So the culture was, I mean, it was a great startup. People were very smart, just trying to change the world, right? Doing something. But the one thing about Coinbase is one of the core kind of thing was we want to do it the right way, right? We want to do it, like, follow all the regulations, get all the licenses that we need, and just do it the right way, right? Without a lot of the shady stuff that's been going on in the space with other exchanges. So, and that has played out well for Coinbase. It's been very successful.
Do you think that they've got like some kind of understanding that there will be regulatory clarity for altcoins? Because to me, it looks like they've entered just like ask for forgiveness later mode, because they're just listing everything, whether it like might be a security or not. Whereas they used to have this framework and this process and all this stuff that they put into practice. And now there's like certainly centralized coins that probably wouldn't pass the Howey test, and they're just listing them left and right. What do you think is going on there?
We must clarify, chat, that Ledger is not a lawyer, nor is he very intelligent.
That's right. This is just, you know, I'm just asking questions, you know.
He's actually a hardware wallet.
No relation. Don't sue me.
I don't know what's going on, obviously, with Coinbase, because I've left the company in 2017. So I can't really comment on what they're doing, whether or not it's following their protocols. I would assume that what they're launching, they've actually vetted it and talked to regulators and they're okay with it. Because when I was there, we wouldn't just launch anything, right? We would make sure that it's legit. It's not a security. But I can't comment on what they're doing right now. I mean, I do see they're launching a lot of these coins that I've never heard of, but I'm too lazy to dig into to see what these
coins
are.
It's weird, isn't it? It's weird because like, I think the golden era was when you at least knew what everything was. And now it's just like, this is listed on Coinbase. So I'm like, I've never heard of that before. And sometimes it's also rebranded and I haven't heard of the thing it's rebranded from. So not only have I not heard of its current form, I didn't even hear of its previous form.
Here's an example.
It's got a bit weird because...
Go ahead.
Give an example. Oh, I don't know. There was something that went on the other day, and I was like,
"I know one." That's what I was going to say. So they there's Ampleforth, which like Ample was this rebasing token on ETH, and then they didn't list Ample, but then they listed Forth, which is the governance token for Ampleforth. Turns out it's their friends' bags, like it's some VCs or whatever that back it. And then I got an email that was like, "Would you like the CEO of Ampleforth to come on your podcast?" And I'm like, "Is this not all just like..." Just a little too coincidental, you know, like this just, I don't know. It just seems like maybe Andreessen Horowitz has a little pull or whoever's backing Ampleforth. I don't know if it's actually
ACCC. I've just realized we've moved up the information chain now because they want us to come on the podcast all the time. I've been ignoring all those emails and DMs. Shit. Now I know when the pump's going to happen.
Now you can ask for money.
Yeah.
No, we don't. Yeah. We don't do that. I'm poor, but Kobe's rich, so like our standards are very high.
No. Like we should have a hard line on it. It's like if you want to pay to come on the show, it's $5 million, and then we'll do it. But it's $5 million to get on the show.
1% of your total supply.
If someone's willing to pay $5 million to come on the show, they're like, yeah, we'll just have a really awkward show where it's like,
it'll be great. We'll just tell everybody when they come on, hey, they paid us $5 million to come on the show. This is a sponsored segment. You would have done it too. Now let's talk.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I only paid you guys $10,000 to get on the show, so.
Yeah. R.I.P. Yeah, but it was in Dogecoin, and when Dogecoin goes to $100 each, then
that's
we're
right.
Good. All right. So apart from like a billion coins getting created, every exchange that's ever existed dying within 18 months, and the like influx of like middlemen, I think the crypto industry has so many middlemen for an industry that was born out of like removing the middleman as like a primary function of the like creation of the technology. The crypto industry has more middlemen than ever. I think there's like NFT artists get a middleman to deal with all their stuff, and then that middleman gets a middleman to deal with another middleman who deals with like the NFT exchange. Outside of all that stuff, what do you think of like the trends in crypto at the moment that you're most disheartened by and most like, really, this stuff again, or is this where we're ending up? Like the worst stuff that's happening in crypto.
Well, to comment about the middleman, I don't think Bitcoin was created to remove the middleman, right? So it's not, there's always going to be middlemen. So I think what the powerful thing about Bitcoin is that you don't have to use a middleman. right? You can always opt out of it. I think a lot of people put their coins on Coinbase because it's actually just a better way to store coins for them, right? For people who aren't technical, if they store it themselves, they're going to screw up and lose all their money. So Coinbase or other solutions is just a better solution. It's not ideal. And if they ever get good enough, they can remove it. They can pull their money off of Coinbase and do it themselves, right? Its ability to do it themselves is what's powerful, right? So once, if you lose that ability, if Bitcoin becomes more centralized where it's harder to run your, where it's hard to run your own node and you have to rely on third party for information, then it becomes centralized. Then it's not good. But just the fact that there are central transactional solutions like Coinbase doesn't make it bad. It just gives people option. But the most important thing is you can always opt out and do it yourself.
Yeah, I think that's true. Like the opportunity to remove the middleman is probably a better explanation. But you can't skirt the question. We want to know what the absolute shit is. What are the things you're most disheartened by in the industry? And if you're not sure, I've got a video that we can watch, Ledger.
What I'm disheartened by is just all the FUD that's always out there, right? So like the climate thing where Bitcoin is destroying the climate. Stuff like that is just... it's just really annoying because you just can't fight it, right? You speak, the narrative's out there. You, no matter what you say, it's not going to really change those people's opinions. And then they're just using that FUD to kind of hurt Bitcoin. And it's quite annoying.
Yeah. I've got a worse one, Ledger. We've got to watch it. And I want to ask Charlie's opinion.
Okay. You're going to send it to me?
Yeah. Where do you want me to send it?
Just in Telegram.
I can't believe we're going to put this on the stream.
Sure, why not? As long as it's a URL.
My dad's watching, so...
How bad is this about to be?
It's fine. It's fine. Trust me.
Okay.
Trust me. I've got a good barometer for what's fine. You know it is straight away. I've just sent you it on Telegram.
All right. Y'all may not be able to hear it because I've got a mix minus in. If you
know. No, you need the sound, otherwise it don't work. You mean me and
Charlie? No, the chat will definitely have the sound. I can't.
Well, then how's Charlie going to comment on it? We need to know what Charlie thinks about
this.
Send
it to me so I can watch it.
Yeah, send it to Charlie.
Send it to the chat.
Zoom chat.
We'll have to do a...
I just made my own cryptocurrency. This is what it's called.
Hold on a second. All right, the chat will definitely be able to hear it. Is everyone ready?
We need to know what you think of this. We need to know what is your opinion on what we're about to watch.
3, 2, 1, I'm pressing play.
I just made my own cryptocurrency. This is what it's called, and I freestyle finished in 2 seconds.
Got anime waifus. Lauren here, forced with Chaz with diamond hands. We have collectible NFTs, which one do you like? In the chart, we went about 3x after the pre-sale, and went down a bit, of course, the whole thing to do. And now it's going back up again, and I think... we possibly could hit a new all-time high. I just think this would be a fun project because you know you're not going to get real cool because my reputation's on the line here. So, best that you earn with it responsibly. And come get your cummies.
All right. Well, I'm embarrassed.
You need to switch the view back because we can't see Charlie.
I didn't know what that was. But now I do. And shout out, before we... before we get Charlie's opinion, did you know that someone sent Cam Ferguson from our raid the other night, the other week, 95,000 of those coins, which is now worth like 15 or 20K or something, and Blockfolio swept them and credited his account with those funds. So shout out Cam, got an extra 15 or 20K on top of everything else.
This token was
created by this girl?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Cool. I didn't know that. If it was just some random like person that actually created this, that's actually pretty cool. She made
it's
a lot
called,
of money.
It's called Cum Rocket, and the ticker is Cummies.
There goes our ability to send this show to anyone.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool. I didn't know it. I've heard of the coin before. I didn't realize it was created by a TikToker.
It's got a market cap of 200 million. How long did it take Litecoin to reach a 200 million market cap? Because this one did it in 6 weeks.
That's pretty crazy. Actually, the funny thing is when I created Litecoin, Bitcoin's market cap was $200 million.
Wow. So what you're saying is it's still early for commies, because Bitcoin's very, much bigger.
It's very early. It's very
Could early. Be. I don't know if you know what you just said. Bill Maher on HBO actually gave a shout out to this project as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Well, he was.
Yeah, he talked about it on a show. It was like a punch. It was like a punchline. Right? It was like the cringiest segment ever. I watched about a minute of it, and this was in that first minute.
Oh, it was the dude. He was like dunking on all of crypto, saying it's going to zero again.
Yeah,
he did the exact same segment in 2013, but like without all the token stuff. He did the same segment on like why crypto is going to zero in 2013. He just recycles his content when it keeps going up.
Yeah, he's bad.
Just imagine if he bought Bitcoin back then.
I know.
Like that's why you know. That's why you know it's actually still early.
Like universally, the chat says this is a top thing.
What, so Charlie watching commies.
I officially approve of cum rocking.
You know people love clipping this show, Charlie.
The thing I love is the developer of cum rocket has dropped out of university to work on cum rocket full time, and I just think what a great decision, what a choice that is, like. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Do you think it's a commodity?
I mean, I can't wait to talk to my dad about this.
People just wanted to make it a thing so that it would be on CNBC, right? Just like Dogecoin is on CNBC.
Oh my God. I don't really know where to go from here now.
Me neither. I don't think we just end the show.
So where can I buy some cum rockets?
I don't know the answer.
It's on your favorite smart contract platform, BSC. You can get it on PancakeSwap, I'm certain. You cannot get it from Blockfolio.
That's lame.
Yeah. Well, it's a responsible place to buy and sell cryptocurrency.
Maybe we should try and get her onto the show with the guy who created Scam, Simple Cool Automatic Money.
I'd really prefer not.
We need an episode. The entire episode is titled "What the Fuck is Happening on BSC?" And we get the Scam Dev, the Commies Dev, and like all these other weird things that like, I just don't even know what's happening. And there's we just have a high quality cryptocurrency chat. You know,
there's a token called Scam.
Oh yeah,
Simple Cool Automatic Money.
Automatic money.
Nice.
It's made by a guy that doesn't even know how he created it, doesn't know what he's doing. He creates videos all the time.
And he really wants to come on the show.
Yeah.
As all scammers do. We got a lot of DMs about people that want to come on the show, but apparently we're going to say yes to the person that created the scam token.
Yeah, he's cool. I like him.
Sure. Why not? Charlie, what do you want to leave people with?
Litecoin.
Buy Litecoin. No. Do buy Litecoin. If Charlie tells you to buy Litecoin, that's financial advice from the man himself. But every show we end with some like wisdom, some alpha, something that can make our viewers like happier, smarter, richer, more fulfilled as people. Maybe a lesson that was passed down through your family, some wisdom that a teacher said when you were real young, and you're like, I'm going to take that with me for the rest of my life. What is it? What's your alpha for the chat?
Sell your shit coins and buy Bitcoin and Litecoin.
He's not bullish on commies anymore. He's not bullish on commies. He's just trying to get a good entry. He's fudding to buy commies cheap.
Today is a doubleheader. Thank you to Charlie Lee at Satoshi Lite. Follow him. Thank you to Blockfolio for being our partner on the show. UpOnly.tv/Blockfolio to check it out. We'll be back. Doubleheader. We got the Trader Edition coming up at 3 Eastern. Thanks, everybody, for being here. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.